Good evening, and you are very welcome to this week's episode of Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. I'm your host, Aisling O'Rourke, and each week we try to give you tips and tricks on how you can be kinder to the environment without lecturing you. This week, we are all about cars. So if you're thinking about changing the car, if you want to learn more about the options available to you in terms of electric cars, well, tonight's show is for you. We're joined now by Shane Prendergast, and Shane is from the SEAI. Shane, you are very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Aisling. Thanks for having me today. Delighted to chat to you on everything EV.
Now, Shane, it strikes me that we might not all be mechanics, but we're fairly used to how a traditional car that is fueled by diesel or petrol works. So when we go to a garage to trade in our old car and get a new one, we kind of have a level of understanding as to how the vehicle works and what we need to be looking for. But an electric car, to many people, will feel like buying a computer they know nothing about. And it can be a bit daunting. And there are myths around them, which I hope we will get to as well, about, oh, they do this and they do that, and they're awful problematic. And, you know, but we get to that. But if we start off with, okay, you know, your average person maybe this summer is thinking, do you know what? I can't sustain these ridiculous prices of petrol and prices of diesel. I'm going to have to make a change here because I simply can't afford it. It might not be with, you know, the environment in mind. It might be purely financial. You know, where do you start when you're looking for an EV, an electric vehicle?
Yeah, so I would always start by kind of explaining the different types of EVs that are actually available out there before getting into deciding which one of which is for you. So we kind of break it down into three categories. So one is your fully electric vehicle or your battery electric vehicle. And this is a car that its sole means of power is an electric motor and electric battery pack. And you actually fuel it or charge it by plugging it into an electricity source, such as a charge point, which you can get in your house. And by doing that, you can actually access renewable energy as well, renewable electricity, which actually makes the cars even more cleaner. We actually call that plugging into the wind, a little bit of a phrase we've coined. The second category then is your what's called plug-in hybrid. So this is a combination of a petrol and diesel engine and also an electric battery pack and electric motor. Now, the battery pack would be a lot smaller in a plug-in hybrid when compared to a fully electric vehicle. And again, you can actually plug this into an electricity source to charge it as well. So then the third one is what's called a mild or conventional hybrid. So again, this does have a combination of a petrol or diesel engine, electric motor and electric battery pack. But again, the electric battery pack within this milder conventional hybrid is actually a lot smaller again than a plug-in hybrid. And it does not come with a plug. So you can only charge the battery from the petrol or diesel engine or the motion of the vehicle itself, the regenerative capabilities of it.
Now, so, I'm a hybrid driver. I drive a Toyota CHR. I think people are very familiar at this point with that milder form of EV that you've described it as, in that there's no plugging in involved. You don't need to have any particular type of socket at home. The electric battery is charged by the petrol engine. The next step up then that involves having to have something that can plug in at home. Like, are they all, I'm guessing the answer to this is no, but I'll ask it anyway. I'm assuming they're not all the same, that, you know, different brands will have better quality batteries, better or maybe more suitable batteries and abilities for your needs.
Yeah, like I would say 3, 4, 5 years ago, there was probably limited offering model wise within the EV section. But as you see over the last couple of years, the technology is just on a massive upward curve. And there's 20, 30, 40, probably 50 models out there that will service, I would say, the needs of almost everyone in Ireland. Well, I find when you're looking to buy an electric vehicle, you have to start thinking a little bit different when it comes to compared to buying a petrol or diesel. It's like EVs are kind of revolutionizing the way people buy cars, because you have to think of it not only as you're going in, you're paying money, you're getting a car. You have to think about the whole change of habit. you have to understand they are more expensive up front, but they do save you over time, such as the fuel cost savings. You can save up to and even beyond 80% of your annual fuel costs each year, but because you're not paying the 220, 230, whatever it is at the pump each time. And you need to understand your driving needs when you're trying to pick which electric vehicle, because you can have loads of different EVs out there. They all have different varying battery sizes as well, which means they all have a varying range that they can achieve on one charging cycle. So you'll have some that would be probably more suited for your urban kind of runarounds, and then you have others that will do cover top to toe, east to west of the country, no problem for you. So in the recent CSO data, it says that the average driving people do each day is about 16 kilometers. So that's actually 16 kilometers. So that's actually quite low. But even if you were to say treble that and add on a little bit and get, say, right, 50 kilometers a day, what EV can I use for that? People would travel that in a commute to work each day, probably, or even more. If you look at technology in the cars that's available out there at the minute, you're looking around 350 kilometers to a range or above. So if you save 50 kilometers, that's one charge a week. So you're actually, it's well within the capabilities, and it's the suitability that people, I think, don't understand as much that an EV is for you. Yes, there is a little bit of changing around, but you have to remember the suitability and the convenience of it. You can go drive to work, drive home. Once you get home, you can plug in your car. You're not stopping in the petrol station. You're not going filling up. You're actually just plugging in and stay ready for you in the morning, like your own smartphone that you have. You plug it in overnight, full of battery the next morning, off you go for your day again. But as I said, the likelihood of you charging each day an EV, very, very low, because they do have 350, 400, 500 kilometers range on them. So that'll cover most driving for almost everyone in the country on a weekly basis or even longer.
So, like, I think, and I'll be honest, the reason I stuck with hybrid when I changed last year was that I felt at the time, I've changed my opinion since, that the infrastructure wasn't there. And I think I now realize that part of that was I'm used to going to a petrol station and I don't see an electric charging point at many petrol stations. I might notice them here and there, but I don't see them in the same frequency as I see a petrol station. And then I'm like, well, hold on a second. What if I want to drive from Dublin to Cork on a weekend away? And like, I don't know where the local, like where the charging point is. You know, like I don't want to be stuck in the middle of nowhere with no battery. How does this all work? So I think that there's definitely a psychological part of this where we believe the infrastructure is not there, where we might actually have more infrastructure than we realize.
Yeah, you do make a good point that it is, when you're talking to people about what's stopping you from making that switch to electric, a lot of people will say it's public infrastructure, it's not there. And to a certain degree, they probably have a point, but there's also, as you said, the counter as well. Like, if you look at it, the industry assumed norm is that 80% or more charging will be done at the home. So you can get in your home charge points where you're in control of how you charge your car, when you charge it, then how long you're going to charge it for. Then you come to kind of your longer journeys, which most people are not likely to be doing on a daily, weekly or monthly basis. It might be your annual trip up to Dublin to do the shopping, or you might be going to see a concert or a GA match or whatever you might be traveling for. There are a number of apps out there that have maps of Ireland that show where the different public infrastructure charge points are. At the minute, I think there's about 1,300 public charge points in Ireland, and that's growing the whole time, particularly with, I think was a year, maybe 18 months ago, they brought in pricing for use of the public charging infrastructure, which actually made the business case for more competitors to join the market, which you're seeing. You have Ionity, you have EasyGo, you have ESB eCars, you're seeing the Lidl's, the Tesco's, they're all putting in charge points across the country. There's numerous, there's probably more that I haven't even mentioned there as well. But if you look, it's about, again, kind of changing that typical habit or behavior. When you're going to do your long journey, just plan it. Like, most people aren't going to drive Dublin to Cork without stopping to get a coffee or stretch the legs, use the bathroom or whatever. You just make sure to where you stop, plan ahead, and stop when there's a charger. So we tend to say in SEI, always try not to stop to charge, but rather charge when you're stopped.
Okay. So, and again, make use of that overnight charge that you get into the habit of, like we all are very accustomed to, and we probably shouldn't be doing it, but we put our head in the pillow and we plug the phone in beside the head and, you know, leave it on the bedside table, obviously not on the bed fan, just in case there's any fire officers listening to me. But, you know, we've gotten into that habit, you know, and so it's just really get into a new routine as far as making sure the car is fueled.
Yeah, 100%. Like, as I said, it is revolutionizing the kind of motor industry because it's a different way of approaching cars, whether you're buying them, using them, or you're selling them on. It's a completely different aspect you have to think of. And it is difficult to change at times. We all know that. We all kind of have that issue. But as you said, you mentioned phone. I think that's a great comparison because it was a new technology. It was an emerging technology 10, 15 years ago. And now it's so widespread. So it's kind of, you can see similarities to the trends with electric vehicles now. And say you put in your home charge point and you plug in your car, you can actually set a timer either on your car or the charger to when that charging will commence. So if you say switch your electricity supply to a night rate electricity, you can actually say, I think it's 11 p.m. please start my car charging at 11 p.m. And then you're charging your car on the lower, the cheaper rate of electricity as well. So again, it is just a slight change of behavior. You set it, you plug it in, it does it for you then. That's the thing you want.
Do you know, sorry to interrupt you there, do you know the way with phones, they tell us that it's not the best idea to leave them plugged in overnight, that you're destroying the battery. Like, can I just say I arrive home from work at 7 o'clock in the evening? Can I just plug it in there and then set it to come on at 11? And then whenever it's full, will it stop charging then?
Yeah, 100%. There's software within them that says you've programmed me to start at 11 p.m. It kicks in, starts charging the car. When the battery in the car is full, the car will then send a message saying, I don't need any more electricity, please stop this. And it stops. So it's the interaction between the car and the charge point that dictates that. But it is safe to even plugged in overnight.
Okay. And then, like, when I was shopping around last summer, and I did quite a bit of it, actually, because I teach in a college, so I get decent summer holidays and I had time. And let's be honest about it. And one of the things that struck me, like, ordinarily going to buy a car, you go in, you've probably already in your head decided what brand of car you're going, because you have in your head that such and such a brand is a good one. And the best salesperson in the world is probably not going to change your mind. But the salespeople now have a new task in that not only are they trying to convince you of the worthiness of the brand that they're selling, but they're trying to be a salesperson for electric vehicles as well, because for most of us, this is a brand new experience and they're being expected to know an awful lot more than they would traditionally have. Like, is there a challenge there? Like, I know the government, the SEAI, wants us all to go electric, but, you know, is there an extra workload then on salespeople in garages where they have to educate themselves about the technology?
Yeah, look, there is, but you could also equate that to, say, when the manufacturer's bringing out a new petrol model, they will have new technology, they will have new nuances that the dealer would have to learn themselves and that. But given the upcoming ban on sale of petrol and diesel cars, that transition is happening now, that we are all moving to an electric society. All the dealers, the manufacturers, they're all aware that unless they make that move, their future is going to be fairly bleak because they won't be able to sell any of their stock. So it's more of a natural progression than an additional workload. And as what they need to know about petrol and diesel kind of reduces, what they need to know about electric is going to increase. And like, it is, as I said, like, change is can be a strange item for people to come in contact with. I can be often resistant to change without even knowing it. You know yourself, you like the status quo.
Are you telling me you're a typical Irish man?
Oh, me? Never. I wouldn't say a thing like that at all.
The reason I asked that question was because when I was going around, and I can only speak from personal experience, but I did ask about, what's the story with the charger now? How do I go about getting the charger? And, but, oh God, no, we don't deal with them here now. That's the SEAI. And I got that in a number of locations. And I was like, oh, you're missing a trick here. Because, you know, it was like I had legitimate questions. I was like, now I live in an apartment. Can I get a charger for an apartment? How does that even work? And instead of saying, well, here's an information leaflet on, you know, from the SEAI, it was, oh, no, hands off, not my problem. And I got that in a number of places. And I wonder, you know, from people that I have been speaking to in the Midlands, I know some people who have electric cars and they've absolutely drunk the Kool-Aid and love it and will never, ever go back. Well, they won't be able to, but they never want to go back. Yeah. But there are others who are genuinely afraid of the technology, suspicious of the technology, and will be very reticent to give up their fossil fuel vehicle. And I wonder, are we missing a trick in the communication side of things here?
Possibly are. Like, we at ACI, we see there's a massive education around this. Like, as I've been saying, it's a new technology. People, unless they get an experience, real life experience of getting in, doing a test drive, that's where we see a big difference, the test drive. If you talk to someone before they drive an electric vehicle for the first time and after, the difference, they're like a different person coming back. They come back with this smile across their face from the experience of driving. And we actually call that the EV grin, because it's that enthusiasm that people get, that once they get behind the wheel of electric vehicles, very difficult to go back, as you said, with the people you know there who've already gone electric. But we do know there is probably a bit of a lack of education out there. Like, at SEI, we often run campaigns to try and educate and provide the information. Like, we have our website, drivingelectric.ie, that hosts a lot of kind of independent electric vehicle information so that people can, from a trusted source such as SEAI. We also have an Energy Academy module. If you search for SEI Energy Academy, you will see there's an EV module there that takes you through the basics of electric vehicles. As I said, takes you the different types of EVs, a small bit. We have a chart tool as well if interested in that. And it just explains a little bit about EVs, their benefits, the cost. And we always find people put too much weight on the upfront cost of electric vehicles. So we do understand they are more expensive, but you need to consider them, as I said, across the whole lifespan of the vehicle, which is what we call the total cost of ownership. So when you actually take all the costs into consideration across, say, a 5, 7, 10 year period, whatever your typical lifespan of a car would be, it actually more than washes their own face, and they actually come out cheaper than most petrol or diesel vehicles out there.
The problem is coming up with the money to begin with.
That's it as well. I just wanted to mention there as well that if you're not interested in doing the sums, we actually have designed a free-to-use total cost of ownership calculator on our website as well, which, just a little plug there, if you don't mind, for people to have a look at. You can pick up to 3 electric vehicles, compare it back to a petrol or diesel car. But yeah, back to your point about coming up with the money at the start, and I completely understand that. But if you were, say, to talk about repayments and things like that, which is what a lot of people will go down the route of, they are buying a new car. Say you go and you get a petrol car, you might pay, what, $300 a month to in loan repayments for that car, or financing, whatever way you financed it. For an electric vehicle, because of the higher initial price, you might pay, say, $450. So you're paying an extra 50% on top for that electric vehicle. But what you need to take into account is how much you're going to pay on fuel each month as well. So if you take that $300 and you say, right, I fill up twice a month, at the moment, you're probably hitting towards $500 or more a month on
good
just
point,
the
yeah.
fuel and repayment and that. Whereas, say, you charge once a week, that's probably going to be somewhere in the region of €40 to €50. So for the month, just to add that. So if you add that then back onto your $450, you've actually evened out the playing field there because of the cost of fuel and boat. So yeah, I completely understand the higher cost of it. But a lot of people say, well, these are my repayments. They don't take into account the kind of secondary costs that come with a petrol or diesel car. And then if you take into account the lower tax rates that you can get off an electric vehicle and the lower maintenance costs, the lower standard maintenance costs, because there's an awful lot less moving parts in an electric vehicle than a petrol or diesel engine. EVs do start to come out on top, and it's happening for most models when you compare them across these days?
Well, Shane Prendergast of the SEAI has agreed to stay with us to continue our conversation around electric vehicles. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. And tonight we're joined on the programme by Shane Prendergast of the SEAI. So we're talking about electric vehicles, Shane. And, you know, like one of the big things, I know we were talking about it just before the break, are, you know, finances are a huge concern at the moment in particular. But in particular, it is maybe a blocking point when it comes to people changing over to electric vehicles. Can you talk me through the grants that are available? Because I think there's a lot to consider. You have to do, like, you have to decide, you have to figure out what vehicle is suitable for your needs and, you know, what way you're going to charge it and the finances of how you're going to get the money together. And then, oh God, I have to go and look at these grants now as well on top of that. And it can be a bit overwhelming. So what grants are available to us?
Yeah, there's actually quite a generous suite of incentives to try and help you make that decision and encourage you to take up electric vehicles. So you said, we at SEAI, we provide a grant of up to €5,000 towards the purchase of a new fully electric vehicle. We also provide a home charger grant of up to €600 towards the purchase and installation costs of putting in your home charging unit. There's a toll incentive out there where you can save up to 50% on your tolls, and that is capped at €500 for a private individual, so myself, yourself, each year, and for a commercial, say your vans and things like that, that's capped at €1,000. There's also EVs qualify for the lowest VRT rate that's out there. I think was it 12 months ago that was reduced from 14% down to 7%. The electric vehicles also qualify for the lowest motor tax that's out there. I think it's €120 at the minute per year. But it's not just the incentives. You have to think a little bit further as well. You have to think of the secondary benefits, such as your lower annual fuel costs. So you can save up to 80% each year on your fueling costs, which is huge now. It's very pertinent at the moment with the way the cost of petrol and diesel are going. And the maintenance, you'd be surprised how much the maintenance cost will make up for you. It will save you a couple hundred euro a year, probably. It depends on what car you had and what car you're going to purchase as well. So it is subjective to your own scenario and situation. And the last one then is there is 0% BIK on electric vehicles. So if you are someone who gets a company car, it might be a time to think of going and asking for an electric vehicle, because you can actually save yourself quite a lot of money at the moment.
So that's benefit in kind.
Yeah,
tax.
It is indeed.
Okay. So then, Shane, like, let's talk about the chargers for a moment. So can everyone get the SEAI grant to install a charger? Like, I'm thinking, okay, obviously if you own your own house and you've got, you know, a private driveway, there shouldn't be any issues there in installing a charger. But what if you live in, what if you own an apartment? What's the story there?
Yeah, you're correct. At the moment, as things stand, you have to have your own driveway to get the SEAI home charger grant. But we are aware that there are a lot of people in apartments or multi-unit dwelling situations that they mightn't have their own car park, they mightn't have their off-street, they might be shared solutions for parking, whatever going on there. And we do need to address that. So we're working with the market and the industry towards a solution where we can incorporate scenarios such as your apartment charging for people into our home charger grant scheme. And we would hopefully have something in place this year.
Oh, that's great news, because I know it is, and people of my generation, you know, some of us are very lucky to have been able to buy our own apartments. Buying a house with a driveway doesn't seem like it's ever going to happen, to be honest. So that is a welcome development. And then what if you're a renter? Because we know there's a hell of a lot of people who are renters, more now than ever would have been in Ireland. Can you have a conversation with the landlord, or how would that work if you wanted to switch over to an EV?
Oh, 100%. Like, if you are a renter or a tenant, you're more than welcome to apply for our home charger grants. We would only stipulate that you discuss it with your landlord and you agree it in principle with your landlord that this is going to happen on the house. And if they allow it, essentially the bill owner, if they allow it, we're happy to invite you into our home charger grant program then.
Okay. Okay. So just have that chat with the landlord and if they're okay with it being installed. And then I was talking to somebody recently who's working on a renovation of quite an old house. And one of the things that they have done as part of the renovations, which I thought was really clever, was they've gotten the house wired for an electric vehicle for when they switch over, because they know they will in the next couple of years. What kind of work is involved in installing a charger? And as a second to that, can your regular electrician do it, or do you need somebody who's specialized?
Yeah, so they're good questions. Like, you can look almost nearly look at your charge point as an appliance, as a fixed appliance, nearly. But the important thing I would always tell people if they're looking at getting a charger in is get a site survey done on your house. Now, most charge point providers out there will provide this service free of cost, but it does help inform any decisions you're going to make in this space, because they'll look at the wiring that's currently in the house to make sure it doesn't need to be upgraded. Because if your wiring needs to be upgraded, you could end up with quite significant costs. You could be €1,000, €2,000, depending on how big the house is and how much upgrades are needed. So it is very important to get that site survey done first. But essentially, if there's no issue with the wiring, it is straightforward enough to get it. The electrician will run cables from your meter board, your fuse board, to the point that you specify you want your charge point in, whether it be mounted to the wall or it be a pedestal. They'll then install that for you. But it is important to note, to avail of our grant, the SEI grant, it must be a Safe Electric certified installer. So a Safe Electric certified electrician. If you go onto the Safe Electric website, you can actually search for electricians in your own locality. So you can, or you can Google it, whatever way you want to do it, and you can find an appropriately qualified individual that will be able to perform the install for you.
I'm just thinking now, it was a number of years ago since, and we've gotten a very good electrician since, but I remember at my family home, I got a bit overzealous one Christmas with all the Christmas lights, and we were eating dinner one day, thankfully not Christmas Day dinner, and there was a whiff of burning coming from the fuse box. So like, that is a very important point. You don't want to cause yourself any long-term issues. So like, when I'm looking for, how do I find a charging provider to go and get this site survey done?
Yeah, we will be putting together a list of charge point providers. We're in the process of doing that, so it's not available at the moment. So the easiest way is by a Google search, or I believe there's actually a Charge Point Installers Association of Ireland where you could go and check out as well. Just an interesting point on your fuse board story then as well is, EV charge points are quite a significant appliance to be putting on your property as well. So they do take a draw of quite a lot of energy and electricity. So if you have an electric shower, there is a chance you could trip out the charge point if you go in and take a shower, and it might not start again. So if you go for a shower at nighttime, or if you're after an exercise or after a long day and you just want to shower, you could end up going out the next morning and realize your EV hasn't charged.
All right. So
what you need to do there is you need to chat to your provider, charge point provider, and your installer, and ask them to put in a priority switch. So the site survey will show this as well, whether you'll need it or not. But if you put in a priority switch, when you turn on your electric shower, it'll turn off your charge point. And when the electric shower goes off, it'll turn it on your charge point again. So you're not tripping out anything, you're not losing out on anything, but it's definitely a point to keep in mind if you are chatting to a provider or an installer at the time. And you have an electric shower, make sure they know you have an electric shower and that you want a priority switch, or you don't want to have to be going out whether it's raining or not after your shower to turn back on your charge point. So
yeah, because even though it rains constantly in this country, we hate going out in it. So that's a that's a really good point, Shane. You're listening to Let's Go Green here on Midlands 103. And tonight we're joined on the programme by Shane Prendergast of the SEAI. So we're talking about electric vehicles, Shane. And okay, you've gone and you know what grants you're eligible for. You've figured out which company you're going to use to install the charger. Then can you give us some tips on figuring out which EV is suitable for you?
Yeah, that's no problem. Like, I would say most EVs are probably suitable for almost anyone out there. you need to basically look at your own driving habits and understand, take, say, for example, a Monday to a Sunday. What's my typical driving? Do I drive 10 kilometers a day, 20 kilometers a day, 50 kilometers a day? What's my commute to and from work? Am I going to the shops? Am I picking up the kids from the school, the library, the swim pool, whatever it may be? Do I go off to the gym myself? You just need to understand your own driving distances. So if you're driving, say, for example, I always just pick 50 kilometers a day because it seems to be just a good round number. You go, you look and say, well, I only want to charge once a week. I want to charge twice a week, whatever. But then you go in, you can go onto the SAI website, and we have the list of all the electric vehicles that you can get in Ireland on our website. So you can go through, and we have car details as well. Or you can go to, if you have a particular brand, you can go to your local dealership and have a chat with them and say, you can go in with your scenario and say, look, I have two kids, I drive 100 kilometers a day, and do you have an EV that suits me? They'll take you through all the different options, but I would say 95% of the situations out there, there's an EV for, because they said the technology is only getting better. Almost all the EVs that are coming on the market now can do 350 kilometers or a lot more in one charging cycle. And if you are worried about your long distances as well, we also have kind of taken our calculator on the website a touch further. And we've made it into kind of a personalized journey cost comparator for yourself. So you can go on, you can pick your commute, you can say it's daily, return trip, you can do weekly trips, monthly trips, you can throw in your once or twice a year where you're up and down the country, and it'll show you what your overall costs will be like when you're trying to help you select what electric vehicles for you. You can compare and contrast and find, will it work for me? Will it cost me? How much is it going to cost for me? But the most important thing when trying to pick an electric vehicle, get behind the wheel, test drive it. That is the most important thing. Get a feel for that car, experience it. Once you experience it, you'll know this is a car for me.
I know I drive, as you call it, a mild hybrid, or the lower tier of electric vehicles, but honest to God, I'm now volunteering to drive everywhere because I love driving so much now. I feel like I did my start of driving, you know, that buzz that you got when you wanted to show off when you're 17 and I got my license. Whereas now I love it. It's so easy. And I'm probably a bit boring about it to the people in my life because I enjoy it so much. But on the same vein, a few people in my life, when I arrived at a family event, I won't give away details, with my new hybrid, a few people were a little bit horrified. Oh God, they're terribly problematic. What are you going to do and spending your money on that? And oh God, those electric batteries, they go on fire. And has been said to me on numerous occasions over the last 18 months or so. So can you allay our fears? Because I think there are a few myths around electric batteries and the safety of them.
Yeah, there are an awful lot of myths out there and they don't really have any founding. Now, has there been cases where electric batteries have gone on fire? Yes, there has. But if you were to compare that to the number of petrol or diesel vehicles that have spontaneously combusted, it's actually miles, miles lower. And there is an awful lot of safety protection that goes into these electric vehicles as well. Like, they're all highly, highly tested through all sorts of scenarios as well. And yes, there is the very, very, very rare, and I can't emphasize how rare it is that they have gone on fire, but you will see 99.99% there's been no issues whatsoever with these at all. And there's actually petrol and diesel cars have taken flame more than electric vehicles.
Do we know, has this been, or like, do we know why it's happened in the instances where it has?
Off the top of my head, I don't know, to be honest. Yeah, I'd have to check in with the manufacturers of those vehicles to see. But like, for me to even find out someone who could even, in those manufacturers who could talk to me, I'd be years probably trying to find out, because it hasn't happened in this country whatsoever.
Okay. And then, you know, we've got maybe, I think we've talked through in depth at this stage the nuts and bolts of doing it. So if you were you know, to say to somebody who's listening to this tonight and is seriously thinking, and mainly it's nothing, maybe it's nothing to do with the environment, maybe it's purely on the financial side of things. What advice would you give them then to start the process of looking into changing over to an EV?
Yeah, I would definitely say the first thing you do is do the research. Like we're finding, particularly since COVID hit as well, that most potential car buyers do an awful lot of research online now before they even go into a dealership, which is important. So you need to do the research, understand your needs, your own driving needs, understand what's out there, narrow down your search, go into your dealerships, take your test drives. And I will always, always tell everyone, do the sums, do the maths around it. And if you don't want to do the maths, go on to seai.ie and you can use our comparator to do it for you.
And finally then, Shane, in relation to the longevity of an EV, and say like it whenever it comes to its natural end, or you want to change up to maybe a newer model in a few years' time, what happens to the environment and to the battery and the impact on the environment? Do we have a way of disposing of those electric vehicle batteries as like safely in terms of the environment as of yet?
Yeah, there is a number of ways that can be achieved. Now, as EVs are emerging technology, so is the battery recycling around it. So a lot of batteries that come out of EVs can actually go on to have a secondary life as battery storage in a domestic setting or a commercial setting, because they wouldn't be required to be as energy intensive as, say, a car who's constantly on the go. But there is the potential for secondary life batteries to go into battery storage for the home or for commercial premises. But what we're seeing now is that actually battery recycling facilities popping up around the world, where they will take the batteries, they will extract all the rare elements that are in it, all the minerals that have been used in the battery, they take them out, they'll recycle them and put them back into the start of the battery production cycle again. So you're looking at the starting to emerge this circular economy around battery, EV batteries. Similar to years ago when the lead acid battery, your 12 volt battery, was put into your car, that when that came out, it took a couple of years, but it came to that circular economy, that when it had done its time, there was these recycling facilities that would remove the elements in it, put them back into the start of the production cycle, and they'd get another life as a battery again. So I think lead acid batteries ended up at 99% recyclability in the end. And that is the path that the EV batteries are on at the moment. It will take some time, but they will get there.
Well, Shane Prendergast of the SEAI, thank you so much for being so generous with your time this evening here on Let's Go Green. I hope our listeners have enjoyed our chat this evening. I know I certainly have.
Thank you very much, Ashton.